This hour of the Overdrive podcast is brought to you by Felix. Embarrassed to talk about erectile dysfunction in person? Felix can connect you to a doctor online to assess ED and, if applicable, deliver treatment to your door. Visit felix.ca.
Well, in my morning loop today, where I place calls and bother people, both of you guys are on that loop.
Yes, we are.
Hazy B, no answer, which I do math as kind of like your work, your work wife, and I know that you're teeing it. So do us all a favor, last tee it of the year. What'd you it's over. We're no more teeing it after today. What'd you fire at the course? And then I have a couple follow-up questions that I guarantee I know the answers to. So what'd you shoot today?
All right, a couple things. One, I'm teeing it well beyond today, so let's just be perfectly honest.
Clarify that.
Yeah, let's clarify a couple of things. I've got plans tomorrow, maybe Friday. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But I think I shot an 82 this morning, but I had my dad out.
There's no I think.
You know.
Exactly. So what was it? That means 86, and you had a couple put in your pockets.
No, that's not true. But what it was I had my dad out. I had my brother-in-law out. And we were playing the hybrid tees, so it's not the tees I usually play or the ones that we would play if you're out with me. So I can't claim as if I was really dialed in today. It was playing a bit of a different course and, you know, different length and all that kind of stuff. So it's probably not going to go into the app. You know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Maybe it will. Maybe I do throw it in there.
You've got to put it in the app. Everything's got to go into the app.
Everything's got to go into the app.
And the follow-up is, it's your first year at a nice course, private club. Did you get lessons from your head pro?
Absolutely not. Lessons? No, absolutely not. I'm not going to.
You're the guy that I'll never figure out. You just show up and tee it, and whatever happens, happens.
That's right.
Where you could be five shots better if you practiced and got lessons.
Maybe. But here's the problem. I can't putt. No lessons are going to help me line up putts better, roll putts better. I've got no touch on the green. Like if I'm
I feel like I'm talking to a young hockey player. Let me ask you this: do you think I'm a good putter?
Yes, an exceptional putter.
Do you know what I did the other day? I went to Modern Golf and I said, "I need you to look at my putting stroke, and we need to fix things so I'm more consistent."
Why?
Next
why
year.
Would you mess
you
with
have
a good
God-given
thing?
Talent too. You've got soft hands.
Like, but why is this
right.
chop?
That's
this
right.
chop refuses. I didn't see him at the front door. All he wants to do is tee it, and then he doesn't care. So if he doesn't care, I don't care.
Well, there's your answer. I don't care if you care. I mean, we can go around the dance all you want. I go from the trunk to the tee box, and and then I start walking. I mean, that's how I roll. And there's nothing wrong with that. And
but
no one I
just,
play with cares
like...
either. No one I play with goes to the range or anything. Everyone just goes right to the tee and hits.
And a pair of jeans right
around.
Out of their car, right onto the first spot.
Literally.
Like, that's what it is.
It's almost – I mean, there's a couple of guys that try to get there a little bit early, but most guys, including our mutual friend, he's usually – pulling into the parking lot on two
wheels.
No, it's
polo for him. He's right in the cart, and he hits his tee shot in the cart, and he keeps going.
And he's gone. He might roll some putts beforehand. Like, maybe he's
but
up
I,
in the range.
Just for
maybe.
The life of me, can't understand, like, why you wouldn't be like, putting is costing me. I'm going to win a bunch of money next summer. I'm going to get my putting looked at. I'm going to get the right putter, the loft, the lie, everything dialed
maybe
in.
Maybe I will. Maybe for you. You know what? That's
but
my plan
I
for the
I know when
time.
You say that. This is why women hate men. Because when we say stuff like that, maybe I will. That
no,
means no,
so.
You won't.
Well, I'm trying to appease you, basically. I'm trying to get you off my back so that you'll leave me alone because you're right. The truth, the answer is I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to continue to roll. I'm going to try to hit bombs.
Your handicap will never change.
It's already gone down. I told you I'd be a single digit by the end of the year. I'm an 8 right now. I'm a legit single digit, which is an accomplishment. I mean, that's a pretty good number.
So you're an 80. Basically, you go into every round thinking you should shoot 80.
That's what I'm aiming for, yes. I mean, that's if I'm feeling it, you'll shoot your number. But generally speaking, you were with me this year. I shot 77. Like, that's a legit round, dude. It's not like I'm shooting 105. You know, I mean, I'm out there. I'm chopping it around. It is what it is. I don't have illusions of being on the Champions Tour.
Dude,
not the next Steve Flesch.
It's your deal. I think with some simple work and some range lessons, like, I don't know, you could be a 4. You could be a 4 or a 5.
You don't believe
but
that
you
for a second.
To get,
You don't believe that. You don't believe I can be a four or five.
Let me jump in here. Honest to God.
Why don't I believe it?
Well, let me ask you then. Oh, if for Brian Hayes to be a four or five, what would it take? You've played with him enough. You think he's got the talent to be a four or five. What would it take? Just the putting? Working on the putting or the stroke or what? What is it going to take for him to be a four or five?
My report card would be this.
Yeah, scouting report.
Major chipping lessons from 50 yards and in. It's gotten a little better than the chunk fest that I saw last year, but it's gotten better. And I also believe you got to look at the putting, and I truly, truly believe you need to take a serious look and see like a touring pro, teaching pro, and look into playing golf left-handed.
This is why it's a ridiculous back and forth, because it eventually gets back to that comment. It's lunacy, and I'm not doing it. Right. You know, it's not happening. Yeah. I'm not going to throw away two or three seasons trying to figure it out to be left to be what, a seven handicap instead of an eight. It's not worth it.
Is there any person that is on the tour that was like, yeah, until college I shot left and now I shoot right?
Of course not, Noodles. Nobody. Right. Of course not.
Right.
Not happening. Like, I mean,
there's nobody in the NHL that was like, I shot right and now I shoot left.
Numerous people write into the show and say, no. I figured out I was a lefty when I was 35.
You didn't go and watch McDavid in Erie and he shot right. All of a sudden he's shooting left in Edmonton.
Exactly.
Like you either hone your craft as you continue to get better at it. I just don't know. That's a major overhaul. I think
it's not happening. It's a waste of time.
Chipping lessons, maybe the putting. I will say this. You got pretty sweet hands. Like I believe you got a better touch than people give you credit for, because every guy that I've ever talked to you that played hockey with you said big, kind of lumbered, but had decent hands. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think who would say that? Koliakovo and Stajan. I don't know who else would have been saying those.
Well, those are guys that understand.
They
the
saw
game
it up
and
close
played.
And personal.
Exactly.
Yeah. I did have buttery hands. I mean, no one's gonna know now. No one's got tape, right? That was back in the 90s. No one's got tape, so no one could prove otherwise. So yes, I had feathery hands back in the day. And I apply it to the golf course. But not getting lessons. I'm not flipping to the left side. I shoot right. I putt left. It's a joke. People call me out on it. But it works. And it's all good. And it was a beautiful day today, which means maybe we're looking at a new leaf. Maybe we've got something upon us here.
Dude, I'm telling you what. I desperately need a Leaf win. I truly need the Leafs to win tonight. They stink the joint out right now. With what's going on in Chicago, it's just, we have to talk about it, but there's no fun. It's important stuff to get through it, but the Leafs stink. What's going on in Chicago? I just hate, and it's hard to tell people this because they're like, well, you can't be ignorant to what goes on, but my experience playing hockey was always great. And to see this, what's happened in other organizations, I can't even fathom. I told you yesterday, being a father of somebody that happened to, I can't even imagine. And I just hate the mark it gives the game, because I had nothing but a positive experience. But 700 players every year, there's bad experiences, and I just hate what's going on. I honestly truly
hate it. It is a dark cloud over the league right now, absolutely. Yeah.
We can't ignore it, and we won't. That's the thing. It's just you got to compartmentalize what we talk about as far as we're going to talk about the Leafs on the ice, the product, all of that, of what we're going through, you know, here in Toronto as fans and media and stuff. But then there are the serious, real-life things that are tied into the league, and that is exactly what's going on with the Chicago Blackhawks and, by extension, Joel Quenneville in Florida and Kevin Cheveldayoff in Winnipeg. Like, it is a black cloud. We talk about the black cloud over, you know, the Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens type of stuff. That's minuscule. That's games.
It's real-life
stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sport, exactly. The real-life stuff, I said it yesterday, it's one layer of the onion. I think there's going to be 20 more layers, and it's going to take time, and people want answers yesterday, which I agree with, but you know, it sounds like due diligence is being done, and we'll have to, unfortunately, in the public, be patient as to let this process play out.
Right, and I think that's appropriate. I know, you know, all eyes are on Joel Quenneville right now and whether or not he should be coaching or not, and he will meet with Gary Bettman. I believe it's happening tomorrow. I think, and Cheveldayoff will meet with him early next week. And it's, listen, the commissioner would have the power to make a call on that, But clearly, Gary Bettman has decided we're going to meet, we're going to talk, and then a decision will be made in the future. Joel Quenneville also would have the power and the ability to step aside for a game or two if he chose to. As of now, he's not doing that. But he's also entitled to, you know, speak his mind and give his side of the story. Like, what has put Quenneville in the limelight is the testimony from Stan Bowman, where Stan Bowman told the investigators in Chicago that Quenneville and John McDonough, the former president and CEO, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, said, we need to be focusing on the Stanley Cup final as opposed to focusing on this story or this accusation. Yes.
Yeah.
And if that is true, and it can be proven that it's true, Quenneville should pay a price and should expect to pay a price. Yeah. Now, the league would have to levy out that price, whether that's a suspension, fines, I don't know. I'm not sure what that should look like. Maybe he steps aside. We just saw it in the NFL with John Gruden, right? His emails came up. He became a distraction. It became too loud. It boiled over. And Gruden decided, I'm going to exit stage left. Maybe that ends up happening. But if it happens tomorrow or next week or 2 weeks from now, I think that's appropriate. You know, let it play out. Let Bettman speak. Let Quenneville have the opportunity to speak because he's entitled to a defense. And we'll find out what the answers are.
Right.
But, yeah, it's not a good spot that the league has found themselves in because of this story that has been out for a while. It's been investigated. It's been reported on. And now the details came out yesterday, and the Leafs just happened to be there. You know, that's another part of this. You're talking two massive hockey markets in terms of the Chicago Blackhawks playing the primary role. The Leafs have no role in this,
right.
But the Leafs are there. And both teams are struggling. You know, like the puck is going to drop tonight in Chicago, and the Blackhawks are dealing with COVID issues, and they're dealing with an awful start to the season. They got a coach who's on really thin ice, I would think, although the GM who hired him is no longer there anymore, so who knows what's going to happen with Jeremy Colleton, the head coach in Chicago. And, you know, the game's going to be played tonight, and 2 points are going to be awarded. Someone's got to get them, and they both need them desperately. Like we talked about it yesterday, you can make a strong case for both teams desperately needing 2 points. I think Chicago in the big picture needs it more. They don't have what do they have, 1 point? They lost in overtime, I believe.
Like
they haven't had a lead at any point this season.
It's
an
astonishing stat. They haven't had a lead yet this season. And then you tie in, you know, I say this respectfully, the distraction of what's going on, like what's going on in that organization of real life stuff. Like that is and then throw in COVID and some of their top players not even available. It's an absolute mess there from top to bottom. And, you know, it sucks on many different levels. But that being said, when you look at the actual event of the game, you know what Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and John Tavares care about right now, other than, you know, the league doing its due diligence and justice off the ice? 2 points and getting their game in order so that they can move on and play Detroit this weekend. Like, you know, the games still go on, but you have to compartmentalize, and it's easier said than done, man. Like, it's, you know,
I'll be eager to see, Jamie, if there's that, like, with all this, with all the events going on around the game, if there's like that playoff desperation intensity to start the first period where it's like they can just simply focus on the task at hand, which is the game for the players tonight. But sometimes when this stuff's going on, it's hard to be overly physical and have your hate on and all that stuff. And it's going to be fascinating to see the start of the game.
Yeah, I'm looking at the goalies tonight as well. And, you know, Jack Campbell has been out of the conversation here for the most part because I think he's carried his weight. But he's given up a lot of goals the last couple of games. And he is in uncharted territory here where if it gets to a point where his team doesn't have any life tonight, he's got to steal one, right? Like,
right.
He might have to steal one tonight, and the same thing applies on the other side, right? Like, Marc-Andre Fleury, who I believe is going tonight, he could steal one. That's another thing.
The
Leafs
capable.
Could throw 55 shots at him tonight, and Chicago wins 1-0 or 2-1 or whatever. But I'm curious to see how Campbell's going to handle all this, too, because, you know, he's the starter. He's the number one guy in large part because of the Mrazek injury, but also because of last year and the way he's played this year. But now he's lost, you know, a few games in a row. And last year that did not happen outside of games 5, 6, and 7. This guy never really had to deal with loss after loss after loss. So he is dealing with something very unique. Sure. And I am curious to see how Jack Campbell responds tonight, because that's another thing. You hope it doesn't play out this way, but the Leafs could be cooking, and if he has an off night,
dude, it's all
of a sudden it's
game,
like,
right?
Uh-oh, what are you dealing with? You're going to have to win 6-5 tonight.
Refresh my memory, wasn't there a crazy game in Chicago a couple years back? A
couple years ago.
That
when
wasn't
Tavares
that the Matthews,
had just
signed. Wasn't yeah, that the Matthews doing that and then the Kane,
and Kane
doing that?
Did it.
And was Jerry Sparks in net?
He was. That would have been 3 years ago because it was Tavares. It was like his fourth game as a Leaf. He scored a hat trick, I think,
night. I think the Leafs won like 7-6 in overtime.
They did. Morgan Rielly scored in overtime. It was a great game. It was an awesome game.
I might have been there.
You were there?
I might have been there. Yeah. Wow. I remember that game. It was unbelievable.
I remember the theater because I don't know who was it first. It was Kane that scored and kind of did the Hulk Hogan or whatever, and then Matthews gave it back to him.
It was the reverse.
Or vice versa.
Really? Matthews scored like a minute to go and did the Hulkster, and then Kane scored with like 20 seconds to go
and
did the Hulkster right back.
And Matthews was smiling on the bench.
And they were both like, okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then Rielly won it in overtime. It was one of the great games of the season. That was a few years ago. Yeah, it was early in the Tavares run because I remember he scored. I think he scored a hat trick that night.
Really?
But that's what we've got cooking tonight. We'll be teeing it up. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. The Raptors are in action again tonight. Pascal Siakam's getting close, but he won't play. They're a one-point favorite over Indianapolis, or Indiana, I should say. And the Atlanta Braves are off and running. My Braves off with a big win. They put 5 on the board through 3 last night, and they held on. Bullpen game. Charlie Morton breaks his leg on a comebacker and still goes out there and gives him a clean inning, strikes out Altuve, which is going to be a legendary scene and legendary video for really the rest of time.
If they win,
but still pitching on a broken leg is pretty legendary. Shout out to Charlie Morton. And we'll catch up with Dallas Braden, get his take on Game 1, what we can expect out of Game 2. Our buddy Jason Strudwick later in the hour. Role play level of concern at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, our buddy Jason Strudwick in about 20 minutes. Role play level of concern in just over an hour. Raptors in action tonight. Leafs in action tonight. Game 2 of the World Series. And Atlanta, man, they pounced quick last night. Quick. They had 5 on the board before the end of the third, and they didn't look back. Yeah, my Braves are looking good. Listen, I'm willing to make a switch if you want. If you want to make a trade on that, it's something we can discuss at some point. I'm trying to feed it in your direction. I'm feeding you winners here. I feel good about it either way. I don't think this series is over, clearly. And to tee up Game 2 and look back on Game 1, we're joined now by former MLB pitcher, and he's an analyst out there with the A's. One of our favorites here is Dallas Braden. What's happening, Dallas?
How we doing, boys? How we doing?
Doing very well.
We're in a bit of a jam right now. I got Houston. He's got the Braves. If you were me, would you flip-flop and switch it up?
I mean, it feels like it'd be a great time to if you were even considering that right now. After what we saw yesterday, the one thing that I think about is the exposing of these bullpens early on. And on the side of the Atlanta Braves, unfortunately, Charlie Morton is not going to be able to bounce back should this thing get extended. And that's where you look at the Astros, maybe coming out of that game a little better, aside from the loss that they got hung on them, and thinking Framber might be due for a bounce back again should that series get extended. The one thing about Houston, and we saw Maldonado hit a ball hard last night, but the one thing about Houston is I just don't know that there's a more potent and a more consistent and just really as far as a pitcher trying to navigate a more turbulent lineup, 1-7, 1-8, than the Houston Astros. So as far as like having any fear of whether or not they can come back or look 1-0, If you're the Astros, you probably feel like, look, we're down 0-1. That's all right. We know what we're capable of. We think that we're going to be able to compete. And I don't think that there's any worry for the Houston Astros right now. So if I were you, sit pat. There's still a lot of meat left on this bone.
Yeah, there certainly is. Right. And I look at Altuve, though, man. He is struggling right now. Like, he is struggling. And people are waiting to poke and prod at him. Morton with a broken leg struck him out last night. And he goes 0 for 5. He almost hit into a game-ending double play last night, 3 strikeouts. He is off. Like, do you have any reason to believe he's going to flip the switch here and come alive?
Well, the problem, I guess it's not necessarily a problem. The problem for the pitcher, the problem for the team facing Jose Altuve, is really all it takes is one swing. And that's really, I think, can be said for anybody that's struggling. But Altuve specifically, you're talking about a guy at the top of the lineup who has, much like we saw from Jorge Soler, he has 1-0 power, meaning the minute you lay one in there, it doesn't matter. The game can change via one swing from Jose Altuve. And I would like to think, and look, being at home, the comfort and the confines of the Crawford boxes being right there in his lap, I made the assessment on our podcast going into the series. I said, just pay attention to Jose Altuve's front foot coming into these first games of this series. Why? Because he is going to be trying to duck hook everything into those Crawford boxes. That's just kind of how he rolls. He can use the other way if he needs to, but for better or worse, Jose Altuve at home is going to pop you and he's going to hurt you pull aside. So I think for Jose Altuve to continue to be a threat, he just got to show up. But as far as producing now, I think maybe there might just be something to allowing the other guys behind you to get big and do the damage, and you get back to using the other way.
With Dallas Braden, Charlie Morton, again, he takes that comebacker off the leg last night and ends up going back out there, pitches with a broken leg. I don't know if it's Schilling and the bloody sock type legendary status, but I think it was pretty impressive, the fact that he could grind. And then I guess he was apologizing afterwards that he couldn't go even further. And it didn't matter because the bullpen came up came out and held up beautifully for him and the rest of the Braves. But what is that, as a former pitcher yourself, when you see that, when you hear after the game he's broken his leg and he still went out there, how do you respond to that kind of a story?
Well, it gets you up out of bed and makes you want to run through your bedroom door and get to the gym, doesn't it? I mean, that tells you everything about that man. And really, that tells you everything about the kind of culture, I think, that had been created there. Because Charlie Morton, early on in the year, had talked about a desire to get to spring training early, to make sure that he was sort of, you know, around guys. And that's just kind of how he operates. He wanted to say, you know, I'm not just showing up here, but, like, we're a part of this here. Let's do this. And so when you have a guy like that and a leader that he is, the quiet leader that he is, it's very easy to look at Charlie Morton like he's somebody that's invincible. So when he goes out and does what he does, you're almost not surprised, but at the same time, you step back and just scratch your head. Like, are you serious? Like, people fall down after a sneeze. I know people that have thrown their back out from coughing. And Charlie Morton just wore a 100-plus liner off his fibula, broke his damn leg, and punched 2 out of the 3 guys he faced next. Come on.
Dallas, how deflating is it when you're the pitcher, you're getting prepped for the game, it's an extensive warm-up from what I see the guys doing on TV, and the first batter in the World Series goes yard on you? Like, how much does that piss you off and kind of deflate you a little bit?
Well, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily a deflation per se, because if 1-0 deflates you, well, I don't know that your tire's got enough tread on it.
But it's not obviously anything anybody's looking for. It's got to rattle you a little bit.
I mean, yes and no. You don't want to start anything 1-0, right? Like, and I affectionately referred to those moments in those innings originally as Texas League innings, because you first get to that competitive level in baseball through the minor leagues, it's usually double A, and you show up, you know, from the lower level and you're here in double A and you've thrown 8 or 9 pitches. The score's 4-0. You've got a base runner on and there's nobody out. You go, what the hell just happened? What just happened? You've hit a guy, a couple doubles, a homer, and you're like, what? I'm 9 pitches into this thing. Well, that's kind of how it felt. But we've been playing this World Series thing, boys, for 117 years. And that's the first time in the history of World Series everdom that there's been a leadoff hitter step up and go, you know what? I think I'll go deep today.
That's crazy.
First time. First
That's
day
a
beat.
Crazy stat. When they said that last night, I was like, what? I mean, obviously, it says something about the nature of the position. Back in the day, no one was hitting home runs. It's a bit of a deceptive stat, right? 117 years ago, no one was hitting home runs. Old Haas Radburn was out there throwing heat. No one was hitting home runs off that dude. But this, I mean, to think that Ricky Henderson, you know, someone didn't hit a home run their first at bat in game one of the World Series, it says something about Solari.
Right.
It says something about, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, who's a friend of the show, and he's a Canadian. He was up here in Toronto. We have him on all the time. And the trade deadline acquisitions, you know, they showed up again last night. Soler, who's DHing, Duvall, obviously, last night. Eddie Rosario has been unbelievable. Jock Peterson's been a stud for them. Like, this guy went out, and they mentioned it last night on Fox, and Smoltz was talking it up, and Buck was talking it up, that when Acuna went down, they easily could have packed up shop. And he sent a serious message to that clubhouse that that is not going to happen with the acquisitions of these players. And for these guys to come in and perform the way that they're performing, it's just an incredible trade deadline. Like, it's just an unbelievable job by a GM.
No, there's no question about it. And I think it's a great point to state that when Acuna goes down, you could – I don't want to say you could understand, because you hate throwing in the towel, right? Until I'm mathematically done with this thing, I'm coming for the throat. And that's the mentality. So when your GM, when the guy pulling strings says, oh, no, boys, have no fear, almost before you could even get the ink dry on putting Acuna out for the rest of the year, Double A was making moves. Double A is wheeling and dealing. And that's, like, in context, it's different when you just have somebody making a move for you, kind of waiting things out. Let's see how we work out. Let's see where we're at. That's different as opposed to being extremely proactive in the pursuit of pieces that can go together, that can fit together to make this thing work. Because what it did really is it gave Alex Anthopoulos a great opportunity to flex his brain, and that front office a great opportunity to show what they can do when they start looking for pieces. And I mean, I hate to even question this, but does this Braves team end up where they're at with a healthy Ronald Acuna Jr.? That's a question that I don't think people even care to ask right now or care to answer, and I understand that. But I think it's something you always have to consider when you're talking about the production of those deadline additions, because they've got the most homers out of the deadline additions in the game of baseball. They have literally powered this Braves team through the second half and into the World Series.
You got to win it, though, for the legacy, like for the story, for the cameras to show up and tell the story. You got to win it, and then all of a sudden it's like you're a champion, you're a true winner. You pulled the trigger on the – if you lose, it's just like, yeah, that was the year that he made those trades and it never worked out. It's just like – it's like anything.
Sight of the context of it all.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got to get across the finish line.
They do.
I would say that when you're talking about a team who won 88 games and is now in the position they're in, taking on a juggernaut of the American League, and they've done it without some of the big key pieces that they were going to need, like no Soroka early on, Acuna Jr. done, and again, to your point, things could have gone very differently. So just to be here, you know, you got guys like Stephen Vogt in that clubhouse that are showing up every day with probably more desire than anybody in that room to win. And he ain't going to get an AB. And when you have guys like that in that room pulling for you, they're not interested in being, you know, just I'm glad we're here, glad we made it. The Braves are very, very serious about handling business right now against the Houston Astros. And a 1-0 lead has them feeling very confident that they're not going to be just happy to have been to this World Series. They're looking to clear space in a trophy room.
All right, so what do you expect tonight, where you got your Urquidy on the mound for the Astros? He throws a ton of strikes, man. He pounds the strike zone up against Max Fried, who the last time we saw him, he got lit up. But he has been a stud here for this team, the Braves. How do you like this pitching matchup, and how do you see Game 2 playing out?
Well, to your point, Urquidy, strike thrower, no doubt. And changeup guy, he's a spin doctor as well. He's got some breaking balls that he features that he's fairly fond of. And I think for the Braves, look, both teams last night, not outstanding with runners in scoring position. If I remember correctly, I believe the Astros were something like 1-for-9. Maybe the Braves were 2-for-9, I think. But Braves got a couple long balls, couple blasts that matter. I think for Jose Urquidy, he just has to allow the defense behind him to do what they do. He's got an outstanding infield. Take notes from what Framber Valdez has done. And the guy, aside from last night and a couple other bumps, I mean, that's a guy, you got the highest ground ball percentage in baseball, and you've got an infield behind you that allows that to work. So if you're taking notes from that, you just go ahead and let that defense work. You continue to fill up the strike zone. Don't try to do anything more than you need to. On the other side of things, for Max Fried, we've talked about Max Fried potentially becoming one of the big game pitchers in the game of baseball. This game tonight would be you want to talk about a pinnacle outing for him? This is the most important outing in Max Fried's career, and I think that's easily said, easily acknowledged. But with his stuff, what we've seen Max Fried capable of, this dude can, if he's on, if he's spinning that bender and that heater up top is working, it could be a long, long day. Long day for this Houston Astros team. Problem is, Houston Astros got about the least amount of swing and miss in baseball. So they can see strikes, they can hit strikes, they can separate balls from strikes. So Max Fried is going to have to be on it from pitch one. And when I say pitch one, the best pitch in baseball is strike one. So that's what Max Fried needs to do, is get ahead of these dudes early, force the action. Should he see this aggressive lineup in Houston start to ambush him early on, break out the bender, start working backwards a little earlier than you thought you might have wanted to. If that makes you uncomfortable, get comfortable being uncomfortable. We need you, big dog.
Well, can't wait for it. It's going to be a fun one tonight. Dallas, we always appreciate you taking time for us, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Anytime, boys. Enjoy game two.
You got it. You too. There he is, Dallas Braden, longtime MLB pitcher and NBCS California analyst. And game two of the World Series going tonight. The Atlanta Braves up 1-0. Game two in Houston. So
is
we
it 2-3-2?
Yes. So we got game two in Houston, and then we will see where it takes us from there when they head to Atlanta.
Hate to say it, that format, Hayes, tonight is must win. Like,
you got to win it.
Well, yeah, I think the Astros respond tonight. I think it started the same way against Boston. Remember, they lost game one, and I think they'll get a split, and then I think they'll head to Atlanta. I think this is going 6 or 7 games. I do. I think both teams are obviously very quality. They deserve to be there. They bring a lot to the table. Houston's bats couldn't get going last night, even with a lot of the bullpen being used in Atlanta. I don't think that's going to continue. I think Houston shows up tonight. I think they'll win. I think it's going to go 6 or 7. Jason Strudwick coming up. We've got role play level of concern in just under an hour. Leafs and Raptors in action tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, role play level of concern at 5:30. Our buddy Leo Routens will join us later this afternoon ahead of the game tonight with the Raptors at home against the Pacers. And the Leafs are in Chicago taking on the Blackhawks tonight. There's a bunch of games throughout the NHL, and we're off and running, man. Every night there's something going on the ice. And our buddy Jason Strudwick from TSN out in Edmonton, longtime NHLer. He joins
tight
us now.
Jeans,
tight jeans. It has become like the go-to commentary with us, Strudy. Whenever you come on, we have people tweeting in saying you have to bring in the tight jeans talk. So I guess we'll give you the floor. Go ahead. Give us the whole wardrobe. What's happening out there in Edmonton?
I'm having date night tonight, my wife and I. So my wife dressed me today. She actually ordered some new jeans in for me. And these ones aren't as tight as normal. I don't know if she thinks maybe I'm getting a little bit chubbier. I don't think I am. But, I think still it'll send a message to her. Again, we'll have to wear a long coat not to get her distracted during our date night.
Okay. Yeah, you got to be careful out there in Edmonton.
How would she become distracted out of curiosity?
Well, when you see these buns walking around the restaurant, it can be pretty crazy. No, it's not for everybody. But my wife, she loves it. She thinks it's fantastic what I've got going on back there. So right. I never had a big bum. You know, PK guys get that hockey bum.
Yep.
From and I didn't noodles. I think Old Dog probably had it. I didn't have the best stride, so my buns never grew that big. So they didn't get smaller.
Sorry, everybody jokes about hockey players having big bums. All the guys that had that flat ass, they were crap skaters. Yeah. Every one of them.
Yeah.
Every one.
One of your great Toronto Maple Leafs alumni, Brian McCabe, one time, and we were out and having a few drinks, and he's like, Study, did you go to Hawaii last year? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, looked like you had a shark attack. Shark bit half your ass off. I'm like, what? And I was so insecure after that, because I never thought I had a small bump, but Brian McCabe, the guy with three pieces of hair on the top of his head, is talking about my ass. So
you better watch what you say about him, because he is one of our personal faves.
We love both you guys and Caber. We've seen it. Caber with the tucked in golf shirt and the he called them
khaki pants. Wow.
I always thought he wore padded underwear because he was he had some junk going on, but
cruising around the draft floor doing his thing, man, making things happen, Caber.
You name it. You name
absolutely.
It.
Well, you guys are both familiar with playing in Chicago. You were there, I believe, Strutty, and Caber was there at one point in his career. And they're not in a good spot off the ice, clearly on the ice, and the Leafs are in there. The Leafs have lost four in a row. From your vantage point, who needs a win more tonight? Is it Chicago or Toronto?
Oh, man, it's tough. You look at that whole situation with the Blackhawks, and it's really disappointing, something I was talking with a friend, and I said, if someone in that organization had gotten cancer during that time, or their house is burning down, or, their house is flooding, they would have dealt with it right then and there. And that didn't happen in this situation. That's a major fail. So it's just that's really disappointing to hear. As far as, today and which team needs to win, I mean, Chicago, I think they're in a really bad spot with just their team, not mention what's happening off the ice. So I think the Leafs, I watched some of that game the other night, especially Matthew scores that first goal. They seem to get energy. He was pretty jacked about it, and then they weren't able to pull it out. So, if I'm the Leafs, you go in there and you're just getting the 2 points. It doesn't matter what's happening over there on the other side of the dressing room or the other side of the arena. You just go in there and take care of your business, and you got to start somewhere because when you're struggling and you don't feel good about yourself, just one good game can turn it around. One good game where you feel like you're going, and it's not like they're playing awful. So I think they're really close. I'd be blown away if they don't get the 2 points tonight.
Yeah, I mean it's been pretty ugly here in Toronto, as I'm sure you can imagine. I mean it's been loud, and they haven't been playing that well. Like in Carolina, they got outperformed. Saturday in Pittsburgh, it was ugly. Before that, bit of a different story. You can chalk it up to early season. You have some ups and downs, but it seems like it can be chalked up in a couple of different places, right? In terms of cities and markets and teams, maybe not getting off to the best start. And we always go back and forth in terms of that drop dead date for when you have to have it cooking and when we can truly evaluate a team. Is that 10 games for you? Is it 15, 20? When do you take a step back and say, I think I've got a read on what this team is all about?
Well, I think it's different for every situation because what was St. Louis like when they won the Stanley Cup? Weren't they last or near last?
Deep in early January season? They were, yeah.
Yeah. So right. I think that the big, I think as a player, and Noodles and O'Dog can agree, you know when you're kind of coming on as a team, right? And then you just know sometimes when you're fading, and it's never a good feeling when you're winning, you're not playing well. Like you can kind of kid maybe the media and kid the fans, but you can't kid yourselves. And I always hated that feeling when we were winning games we shouldn't win. It's great, but sooner or later you got to pay the check, right? Sooner or later the tab's going to get called up. But the other side is too, when you're playing well, you're not getting those wins. You're like, you just got to stay with it because there are teams that when you're going well and you're not winning, they'll go away. And all of a sudden it'll be like, everyone's their own artist, right? Everyone's going to try to do it themselves, which is really dangerous when that happens. But if you believe in what your coach is saying and you keep together the team and you're coming close, you can really come out of quite hot, actually. So, I tend to say the Leafs are more a group that are, you just got to keep moving forward and not try to do it yourself. Because once you do it yourself, you can win a few games with individual artists. But, over the hall, you're not going to win by yourself all the time.
Strutty, have you changed in your Marner jersey for a Hyman jersey yet?
Oh, my God. I liked Hyman. I've always thought Hyman was a good player. I mean, but the start he's gotten off here is amazing. I think, he's had five goals. And maybe collectively it's been like 12 feet of distance. He shot them all, if you add it all up, right? Like he's around the net all the time and the big guys are loving it. Leon and Connor are just loving it. And they had Chase on doing something similar last year and James Neal, but neither of those guys are as quick, anymore in their games. And Hyman's kind of just trending in the right direction. So I I'm blown away with what he's doing here. And he seems to have energized the forecheck for the Oilers. You're looking at Hyman. I'm looking at Fogle. I'm looking at, like, Zach Cassian. He's a new player. You know, Zach Cassian and Warren Fogle together now are really getting in on that forecheck and making a third line that's not fun to play against. They're big. They, you know, they get to that. They bring energy. You know, you see them get into the faces of other teams' players. Like, that's what the Oilers need, that on that third line, because that bottom six has been really kind of a difficult spot for the Oilers. They've, you know, you're playing guys up too far up the lineup, or, you know, hoping that this guy can do that, or hoping that the guy can do this. You know, no disrespect, a little bit like Nick Ritchie. Like, you know, he's an NHL player, but if you push him too far up the lineup, it makes it pretty hard for him to contribute. And we had guys like, who was it, Cahoon here, I think, you know, same thing. And so now they've got guys in the right position in their top nine that are all, you know, feeling comfortable with where they're slotted. The fourth line, I think, is a work in progress, and they have lots of options, and Tippett will figure that out. But that's Zach Hyman, and you know, he's got him, Puljujärvi, Fogle, and Zach Cassian, your top nine. Big guys that can skate and get on the forecheck. Man, that is, that as a D-man, I wouldn't want to play against those guys, knowing that the worst part is the most talented guys are down the middle.
Strutty, you know, biggest surprise in the league, either negative or positive. You look at guys like, or teams like Colorado, Tampa, we just talked about Toronto, or on the negative side, outside of the off-ice mess, Chicago, Vegas, you know, teams that caught your eye that, you know, are looking worse off and you're concerned about maybe them coming back through?
You know, you named it there, Colorado, and I look at their team and you think about how many people they lost this summer, right? They only look at Saad was gone and these types of guys that, you know, it really kind of, and as the door off the big D, man, it changes your team. And now you look at the guys they're trying to replace, specifically in their bottom six. Donskoy is another guy off the top of my head. I'm sure I'm missing some, but those are, you know, with all due respect, good depth players, right? That they can kind of maybe bang around a little bit in your middle six. And now you're replacing with younger players and hoping that they can make those spots. Well, it's not easy. You know, it's, you know, playing the NHL and delivering is hard in those spots. So Colorado, I'm not going to say they're not a playoff team, but are they going to go as deep as a lot of people think when you have that situation there where your depth just isn't what it was? And, you know, you look around those teams and, you know, like a Tampa winning Stanley Cup, they're able to keep that depth or replace that depth with some other players that came in that were youth, and you need to have that. And so, you know, the top teams will have top players, but I think it really gets down to that third and fourth line. Can those guys contribute and just give those big guys a breather some night? And I don't know if Colorado right now maybe has that mix.
Well, yeah, I'm with you on that. I saw something last night in that Vegas game where Dadonov stole an empty netter at the end of the game. Did you guys see that from Kolesar?
Well, he tried to do the give and go or something.
Shotless.
I think he was probably trying to say, like, here, give it back to me because you get your little point or whatever, and then he just had to touch it crossing the goal line. Strutty move.
That looked like a strutty move. That's what I was thinking. Strutty was up there. You're taking that G-note, aren't you, Strutty, or what?
But I'm just happy to get a plus. That's all I want. Like, don't give it to me. Just get me the plus so I can skate off and the coach can say, oh, Strud with plus one. We'll play him again next game.
I love it. Yeah, you got to listen. You got to take it when you can get it, man. And that Kolesar, he's a kid. Like, he's just trying to make his name. That goal, imagine he goes to arbitration or something and he's stuck on nine goals. And like, man, if he had double digits, we'd really love to hand you over about $1.8 million. But I just
Strutty,
don't think
what was
we
your
can.
Worst? What was your worst minus ever in one game?
New York Rangers.
New York Rangers. My first time back. So I just signed the Oilers. I come back there, and we're playing against the Rangers. My partner's Tom Gilbert, and I'm so excited to play. I'm minus three before I even get a sweat on. Like, I'm talking, it is a gong show. Marion Gaborik, one point, he had a break when I was trying to catch him. We could have been on the North Saskatchewan River, skated from Winnipeg to Edmonton. I would have never caught him. He was flying. And then so the fifth goal, I'll never forget, I'm out there, I'm in good shape. Tom Gilbert, the alleged skilled player on our line, he turns and gets the puck, passes it right on the tape of Gaborik. As soon as I saw it, I just started skating right to the bench. And I was done. And he buries it. And Tom just comes over. He's like, Strutty, sorry about that. I'm like, yeah, thanks a lot. I didn't play for a month. A whole month I was healthy, scratched. And so I was telling the guys, like, you know what? I've made it through injuries. I've made it through lockouts. I've made it through coaches being fired. I couldn't survive Tom Gilbert. He ruined my career. And the guys were dying. Tom guy's like, tell me about Tom. Tell me the Tom story again. I'm like, you were there. He screwed minus five. Who does that to someone? A minus, like minus four. You're like, okay, that's a tough night. But minus five, like, who's minus five? Was it McKinnon the other night? McKinnon, Burakovsky?
And I would Ricard. Yeah, guy. They were. Yeah, it was crazy.
Minus five, yeah. That's in the Hall of Fame, man. The Hall of Fame wants the puck.
But at least they can score some goals. Like, those guys have a chance. Like, my ledger's pretty tight. Like, if I get down to minus five, minus ten, it's not like old Uncle Strutty's going to score a hat trick one night to get back in the win column.
No, exactly. plus five is not on your horizon. Like, it's never going to happen.
No, that's but let's be honest, Tom Gilbert, karma got him because he went bald. He started going bald, and you know, that's so... You know, and I don't feel bad saying that at all about him. I couldn't believe it. That guy screwed my career. I had another 6 months a week.
That one hurts.
It's all pretty right, ignorant to go up to the guy, though, and say, you deserve that, you bald bastard.
We got to leave it there. We got to fly. See we'll pick Strutty. Up on this next time. Thank you, Strutty. There's Jason Strudwick from TSN out in Edmonton, longtime NHLer. Tom Gilbert causing him a minus five night. That one hurts.
Can you imagine being scratched for a month after a game, though?
And you can't even really argue against it. You're like, yeah, it's probably the right call. Role play level of concern coming up in the next hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
This hour of the Overdrive podcast was brought to you by Felix. Erectile dysfunction treatment online. Felix can connect you to a doctor to assess ED and, if applicable, deliver treatment to your door. Visit felix.ca.